It's time now for Minnesota Reads, where we interview Minnesota authors and the books that they've written. And we've got on the phone with us this morning, actually co-authored, written by Martin Keller, for photography by Greg Helgeson, a book that they've compiled called Hijinks and Hearsay, Scenester Stories from Minnesota's Pop Life. And they both have a long and storied career in the Minneapolis music scene, and they join us by telephone. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Morning, Chris.
Morning.
So, I guess I'm not sure how to start this, but this book, if I understand correctly, is sort of a new compilation. This isn't, I guess, what a lot of journalists might do is just get all of their old articles out and attach the photographs from back in the day and sort of slap together an anthology. You've created a new book based on a lot of photography that apparently has not been seen before, and you've also, Martin, created some new stories about the scene back then, not just the stories from back then.
There's quite a few stories, I think 42, we like to call them vignettes. The book is really kind of a fragmented memoir from that period, a cultural memoir from the late 70s to the early 90s, from a highly influential period that's still having an impact on popular culture today. And it features, as you mentioned, 150 of Greg's wonderful black and white photographs, a lot of which haven't been seen before. He and I had worked together in the trenches during that period, and a couple years ago we decided, hey, we should do a book that has a little different, more personal feel, you know, something like, let's take the readers with us when we go to interview Bob Marley and Paul McCartney and go on the bus with Bonnie Raitt for a week in the Rockies with Lamont Cranston and tell them what went on behind the stories.
Wow, so this isn't just the Minneapolis scene. You traveled with these people as well. You were out on the road.
Right. There's a whole chapter dedicated to road trips that I had taken, and includes that Cranston, Bonnie Raitt, Colorado trek. But the book also reaches further into what was happening then, like the rise of the comedy scene here that produced people like Louis Anderson and Liz Winstead, who co-founded The Daily Show. Scott Hansen, one of the founding pillars of the comedy scene here, with Jeff Gerbino, and of course Joel Hodgson from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah. And the photography too. Now, were you on the road, Greg, with Martin, when you went out on that particular tour? Was it sort of a partnership all along, or was it come and go with you two? Did you meet up?
It was a bit of the latter, come and go. I went on the road a little bit, but not like Marty. Marty was, in particular with the Cranstons, that was pointed out. So I shot Twin Cities-related areas.
Yeah, and you worked. Now, the publication was called Sweet Potato, is where you first started working together as sort of a co-authors of that that particular journal?
Yes.
And
yeah. Sweet Potato became City Pages, the alternative weekly here, and then Greg and I also moved over and worked for the rival paper, Twin Cities Reader. And, of course, we, like any good person working in the arts, we freelanced quite a bit for the daily papers and national publications like Rolling Stone and Billboard, Reader, et cetera.
I forgot that that Sweet Potato became City Pages. That's a detail that slipped my mind, but that's quite a founding there. So
the book is here to remind you.
I guess. So these photographs, a lot of them wonderful photographs, and I can certainly see when you're creating sort of a retrospective where the two of you are looking back together that they make sense, but they're great photographs. Why were a lot of them not published at the time? Is it just the realities of journalism at the time that you didn't necessarily have 30 photographs you could put in one article, or is it?
Yeah, most of the time it was that in particular, but it was also the fact that when we did this book, we kind of wanted to show what it was like to be journalists in that realm at that time, to show what it felt like in a way.
Yeah.
And I just decided to scan a lot of images. I started in 2011 and scan images, and as I was going through them, I discovered lots of stuff that I had never really paid attention to before. And found, frankly, a lot of them I didn't even know where they were.
I think about the National Geographic, and they used to say that there were 3,600 photographs for every article. They had to pick the 20 that they liked, but they left so many on the cutting room floor that were probably stunning as well. So this is a great opportunity to see a lot of these images. And it's not just the Minneapolis music scene. It's a lot of great national acts that came through. You were given access to quite a roster of people.
Oh, yeah. It was a pretty interesting time in that respect. Sure.
Yeah, we think you know, access during that period was really the most critical thing that differentiated this period from other periods. You know, we had literally a couple days with Bob Marley when he was in town. We had 3 hours with him in his suite in downtown St. Paul. You know, that just doesn't happen anymore, and it started to end probably the mid to late 80s. It just got much more controlled. So the book is wide-ranging in that regard, and that it really tells the readers about what a different period it was.
Hmm. What do you think accounts for that particular change, that gain of sort of more tight control of artists?
Well, I think the proliferation of more media, the public wanting you know, images of their favorite artists, et cetera, or favorite comedians or writers. I think publicists and labels, managers, they just wanted to try to control the brand, if you will. And as a result, you know, you get very limited access from that point going forward to today.
Wow. So not only about interviews, but photography as well. A lot of these are on stage, but... Greg, a lot of your photographs are backstage or out and about. I love the photograph of Seinfeld with, I'm forgetting his name. The founder.
Joel Hodgson.
Yes, Joel Hodgson, the Mr. Science Theater 3000 fellow. They're out in a parking lot, sort of just goofing around. Where do those photographs come from? How do you get to travel around not only, you know, in the theater, but you're out and about with them as well?
Yeah, I always insisted on wanting to do offstage photos. I made it a point to, I personally wasn't crazy about doing the concert photography. I wanted something different, and the way to get it was to try to do photos with them backstage or wherever they were, and I was pretty fortunate in that respect. In Seinfeld's case, it was downtown Minneapolis at a hotel, and I walked in, and we ended up just clowning around in the hotel, and then we went out into the parking ramp, as you see the image that's in the book.
Yeah. So are there particular stories in this book that for the two of you really are special, or are there artists that that really were ones that mattered more to you than others, some particularly personal stories that really sort of had an impact on you in your life?
Well, I think for me, the Dylan story that opens the book and the Prince story that closes the book, I had pretty great access to both of those recording artists, which not many journalists can boast of at all. Dylan, because I'd always been a huge fan. I actually had Bob Dylan dreams prior to ever getting into the journalism genre, and Prince, just because I logged so much time with him, and he had such a tragic finale, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question. For me, it was just the whole broad spectrum, but it would kind of be, I guess, maybe people like William Burroughs and Dr. Seuss and the hodgepodge of the rock stars that are in there that made a difference, that really knocked me out in terms of being able to photograph, because it was just something that I never thought. I went to the U of M in photojournalism. I'd never had a clue that I'd be able to end up photographing people like that, much less spending any time with them. So maybe not one particular artist. Prince, of course, is important, and he was one of them, but it's the broad spectrum for me.
Yeah, and the big names, of course, Rolling Stones and Paul, Linda McCartney and Bob Marley, U2, those names, of course, loom large nationwide, but I love that you've interspersed them with a lot of what I would call hometown heroes, and especially for me, Colonel Ray Glover, Louis Anderson, just the whole... Husker Du and all of the local artists that to me are what make Minnesota music seem so special, and that you were able to really put them all together in one book and not just compartmentalize them in such a way. It makes them all sort of equally special in this book.
Yeah, I think the design of the book was intentional in that we wanted to tell good backstories. You know, there's a whole chapter on the West Bank blues and folk scene that included Colonel Ray and Glover and the Cranstons and, of course, the late, great Willie Murphy and his band, the Bumblebees.
Mm-hmm.
Comedians like Louie, and, you know, I've developed a lifelong friendship with Louie as a result of interviewing him early in his career before he moved to L.A. And, you know, it's a different perspective on things when we looked back when we were working on the book in 2018, we said, hey, man, look at this. This was the last era before the digital tsunami hit. It was really the last era before of the truly alternative press, because most of the independent weeklies were bought up and consolidated by larger corporate entities. And it was also, as we mentioned earlier, a period where we had pretty much wide-ranging access, and of course the rise of the whole independent music scene with the Hooskers, the Replacements, Suburbs, and others, and the Paisley Park Kingdom.
Yeah. I had this deep thought that I bet you there are more stories and more photographs to tell. Is there any chance there'll be another book coming along?
Boy, that's a good question. we needed a big break after we did that, because for me, like, I doubt it. But, I mean, I started scanning these images in 2011. So it was when we finished back in April of this year, that was like, needed a big break. I can't speak for Marty, but I don't know. I mean, I got other images that I actually submitted something like 450-some images for the book, and, of course, there wasn't enough space. Marty tells me there's 150 in the book.
Mm. Yeah, I think if there's any sort of follow-up book, it's going to be a collection of Greg's photographs, probably without any written text. I think I pretty much have said all I wanted to say in that book, but you know, Greg's got a really impressive, deep archive, and I wouldn't be surprised if someone approached him to publish a book like that. So stay tuned, I guess, is the word.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Thanks so much, fellas. I appreciate your time this morning, and especially for getting on the phone the day after the holiday. We appreciate your time.
You know, at some point we want to come up to Duluth and do a little book signing and Q&A, so we'll let your listeners know when that happens.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, both of you.
Thanks, Chris. Happy New Year.
Take care.
Happy New Year.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Martin Keller, writer and photographer Greg Helgeson, about the book they've published, called Hijinks and Hearsay, Scenester Stories from Minnesota's Pop Life. And it was just published by Minnesota Historical Society Press this year. Minnesota Reads is produced at KMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.